Argue, argue, talk, talk, talk. Exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't talk, you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And welcome to show number 67. Oh, what a great day it is to be alive. And a beautiful spring day. I hope it is where you are. Where I am is beautiful out. The weather's getting warmer and warmer. And there is so much to talk about. If you'd like to join me in this first segment, I'm going to do about a 20-minute spouting off session because that's what we do around here. We spout off, sometimes even really important issues. In fact, we'd like to think a lot of important issues. If you'd like to join me, and in fact, even with my guest, I bet he'd be interested in taking a call if you have a mind to. The toll-free number live, if you're listening live, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, I'm ready to start spouting off right now about a headline that I saw in a Huffington Post article. Here's the headline. President Trump's approval ratings tumble to below 40%. Now, you probably saw that, it was around 37%. At least that's where it was reported. Not only do I always I'm always skeptical about those approval ratings, but I'd like to talk a little bit about that. And this is being reported, of course, in a very left-wing online organization called Huffington Post. And it says, let me read the whole thing in its entirety instead of interrupting myself. President Trump's approval rating tumbles to below 40% after Mueller's report in new polls. So that's the money headline for the left. They want us to believe that people read the report and found out that Trump is culpable, Trump is liable, Trump is impeachable, which, of course, he is impeachable with a Democrat House. They can always impeach. But in case you didn't know, and if you're listening to me, you probably do, impeach is just another word for indict. And the left is between a rock and a hard place because they haven't got a case. But they have created a... You can call it either a Frankenstein's monster or a Jurassic Park dinosaur. The left has been inciting hatred, violence, even in some cases, and horror for this president even before he was inaugurated. And they have their base worked up into such a frenzy that they want, that the tail is going to start wagging the dog now. They have created this monster in their base that are out for impeachment blood, regardless of how pathetic their case is. They have no case. Now, a lot of us get afraid sometimes that there is enough Trump haters and never Trumpers in the Republican Senate to possibly convict. But on what? And no, I don't think there is. I really don't think there is. So what they want is to appease their base, which they created, while realizing that not only do they not have a case, but if anybody really looks at the Mueller whole story from beginning to end, the ones that look really culpable are the left and the media themselves. But yet, they're rubbing their hands together with glee with this media-manufactured appeal to the most ignorant. Obviously, they're not listening to this show. And by the time this podcast makes the rounds on the internet, it's going to be a hiccup, this approval rating of Donald Trump's, because he's sitting with so many Trump cards, it's not even funny. He hasn't even begun to declassify tons of information that he has and we don't about what has been going on in our government ever since the previous president, not this one, the previous president took office and decided to weaponize everyone and everything and their brother-in-law that are America-hating socialists. I have said from the very beginning, all leads road. There's a spoonerism for you. All roads lead to Obama. And what we are seeing, which is opening the spider's web, the Pandora's box of corruption that we have been festering in the federal government, that this is only the tip of the iceberg. As I was prepping the show today, I heard a fellow commentator talk about how, God forbid, if Hillary had been elected president, tooey, God forbid, thank God, and we must, in the week right after the Holy Week, and it's still Passover, talk about, thank God that Hillary was not elected. No matter how much the Obamas and the Clintons hate each other, they are aligned in corruption. So they know enough about each other to be dangerous to one another. So I think the Obamas desperately needed the Clintons to win, and she didn't. Even with all the cheating and the corruption and everything else, she just couldn't pull it off. Thank goodness for that. So this commentator was saying that, God forbid, if Hillary had been elected president, none of this ugly infection and poison that we are seeing come out in the so-called deep state, whatever you want to call it, the swamp, would we be seeing any of what's been going on. But see, turn it around. That's what's interesting. People keep saying, oh, they hate Trump so much. No, this is the reason they hate Trump. They trumped up hatred against Trump in order to try and tap down what they stood to, the blows they stood to be dealt, which is they knew Donald Trump wasn't going to play ball with them. They knew Donald Trump was going to expose the corruption, the poison that's going on in Washington, weaponizing all our government agencies with unelected bureaucrats. They knew that's what was going to happen. That's why they've been creating this dinosaur. It isn't rocket science, what's been going on. Unfortunately, inside the Beltway, even some career Republicans have difficulty seeing this, either because they don't want to, because they're globalists, or because they agree, or they're just too naive. Maybe they're just too naive. I'm not sure. So the people that are buying this notion that Donald Trump, that the Mueller report somehow indicts Donald Trump, nothing could be further from the truth. It points out the obvious. It has been an evil lie, an attempt to unseat a duly elected president, an attempt in plain view, to frame a president of the United States. That is what we are looking at. Now, there weren't any grounds in the first place to even begin this whole process. There weren't any grounds. It's just amazing. So we can never really acknowledge They can never really acknowledge that they were wrong from the start, because they knew they were wrong. That's what they knew. Now, we are going to continue talking about this with somebody that I've heard on the radio with another fellow talk show host who's so good, so much fun, and probably more circumspect than I tend to be. And that's why I thought it would be very, very fun to have him on. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, because we're going to bring him on a little earlier than usual so we can continue this conversation. And by the way, as always, after we get to know a little more about our guest, if you'd like to join us, toll free, 888-627-6008. You can do that as well. My guest who's coming on with us right now is Doug McQuiston, who is a Colorado trial lawyer, mediator, and writer with over 37 years experience specializing in litigation, alternate dispute resolution, lots of big words there, law and technology, and law office management. He comments on history, politics, current events, and philosophy. That's why I wanted to have him on. And in his spare time, get this, he plays the bagpipes with a Colorado band. So right now, please welcome Doug McQuiston. Hi, Doug. Thanks for joining us,
Karen,
on Starting Off.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great having you as well. So you do mediation. You try to get people to come to an understanding without having to go to court, right?
That's what we try, yeah.
Well, great. And we're going to make sure that people know how to reach you at the end of this show in case they have a problem. We have a broad and sometimes even national audience, but you never know. Someone might call you with that. Now, in this two-year-plus investigation known as the Trump-Russia investigation, the Mueller investigation, you're one of the few people that has read, so far, that I know, 400-plus pages of the Mueller report. Give us first your general thoughts on that and what you think the takeaway is.
Well, I've been trying to get an accurate count of the number of people who have opined about the report that have also read the report. And in my informal polling on my social media pages, I think a lot more people are talking about it than have actually read it. But I decided if I was going to talk about it, I better read the whole thing. It's kind of the lawyer in me. So I went ahead and spent the better part of the day plowing through the whole thing. The overall take is, wow, 2 years. $24 million at least. I mean, that's just kind of a conservative estimate. Several hundred people working on it, from FBI agents to intelligence agents to lawyers, teams of lawyers, hundreds and hundreds of subpoenas, hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. He went through everything. And, you know, Mueller has a reputation of being thorough, and he was nothing if not thorough with this. I would say there was absolutely no stone that wasn't overturned at least a few times. And really came up with, I wouldn't say nothing, but not nearly as much as we had been getting told for the last 2 years in our in most of our mainstream media pages. You're hearing a lot now from Democrats who say, well, Mueller didn't exonerate Trump on the collusion charge. We think there was plenty of evidence of collusion. Well, they're just plain wrong. He did, in fact, exonerate Trump on the collusion count. He went through all of the evidence and said that there was none, that there was no evidence that the Trump campaign or Trump himself ever actively or even less than actively cooperated or collaborated with Russian interests to gain an advantage in the election. That much has been proven true. I can't tell you how many times in the report this phrase appears, the meeting didn't take place. Now, the Russians made a lot of overtures toward the campaign. There's no doubt about that. They were making runs at both campaigns, and you and I maybe can chat about this a little later. Their inroads with the Clinton campaign were far more successful for them in terms of how they approached the Clinton campaign with dirt on Trump and how readily the Clinton campaign accepted and even paid for that information. But they made comparable runs at Trump's campaign. And you got to keep in mind, this is something that the Russians have been doing to some extent or another with varying degrees of success for probably the last 70 years. They like meddling with our elections. They like meddling with our processes. They like to make trouble for the United States. It's something that they've gotten pretty good at. But for all of their work, it really came to nothing. And that's kind of what came out in the Mueller report. But the Mueller report is replete with these lengthy deconstructions of attempts the Russians made to contact Don Jr., contact people like even Manafort, who I'm no fan of, all these attempted contacts. And in every one of them, the paragraph ends with, "But the meeting never took place." And that's the story, I think, that comes out. The meeting never took
place. Never took
Nothing
place.
Came of it.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
That, I think, comes through clear.
So we've got time because I brought you on a little early. We're going to take a break around the bottom of the hour. Let's deconstruct a little of this and go back a bit because, you know, we've been talking and analyzing and looking at this always from one perspective, really, never from another. I'll make that clear in a minute. Were there ever, in your lawyerly opinion, were there ever any grounds to do this special investigation in the first place?
It's kind of two questions, Karen. Question number one, were there grounds, I hate to lapse into legalese, but when you're talking about commencing any kind of an investigation, the standard typically is there a reasonable basis for suspicion that something might have occurred? It's important to keep in mind that Mueller's investigation was not a criminal investigation. It started its life as a counterintelligence investigation. Remember way back when he was appointed, the appointment documents made clear that he was to look into this from a counterintelligence standpoint. What did the Russians do? What were their inroads into our election? Did they make any successful approaches to either campaign, or for that matter, the Sanders campaign? There were efforts afoot by the Russians to help the Sanders campaign in order to destabilize Hillary. So it started out its life as a counterintel investigation. So the standard for opening an investigation is much lower. You don't have to have reasonable grounds to believe a crime has been committed. You just have reasonable grounds to believe that the Russians were up to no good. On that basis, there was certainly grounds to investigate. Well, now, the second question, though, is were there grounds to appoint a special counsel? I think clearly the answer to that is no. I still don't understand, and I've read a good deal about original Attorney General Sessions' determination that he had to recuse himself, and I don't agree with his decision. I think it's not exactly a slam dunk of a decision. But his basis was that he had actively participated in campaign events for Trump, and therefore, if Trump were a subject of the investigation, he should recuse. But remember, Trump was not a subject of the investigation when it first started.
Well, that was a big debate, is that's why Comey kept reassuring Trump that he wasn't a subject of the investigation, and yet he refused to go public with it. Isn't that why he was fired?
Yes and no. I think he was, we'll get into the firing in a minute because I think how Trump handled that firing is probably the most important reason that Mueller's investigation got sidetracked into the obstruction of justice issue. He handled it badly. It goes without saying he can fire Comey for any reason he wants. He's the president of the United States and Comey works for him. But, he could have made it clear that he was firing Comey simply because of how Comey handled the Hillary investigation and left it at that. He didn't need to be saying some of the things he said, and we can talk about that in a while. But,
well, let me stop. Yeah, Let's go slow there. Let's stop for just a second because this kind of goes to at least some of the discussions we've had on a very active Facebook page that you have.
Right. Thank you.
I might be drawing a blank here. I love that when that happens. In many respects, didn't they go after obstruction of justice because they knew they didn't have collusion? They kept going back and forth between the two.
Yeah, I think it kept going back and forth. And I do think there
was a definite
thrust toward
that. And that's because they knew they didn't have it. Yeah.
But the problem is, with all of these special counsel investigations, they take on a life of their own. And to say, obviously, the Trump campaign, or by then the Trump administration, although they were far more cooperative with this investigation than the previous precedents we had, the Clinton email investigation in the prior administration, and then going back to the Bill Clinton investigation, the Starr investigation, in both of those examples, the administrations then in power were far less cooperative. You got to keep in mind, Trump never asserted executive privilege.
Yeah, he didn't have an 18-minute gap in the
And there was no 18-minute gap in the tape. There were no bleach-bit email servers, et cetera. So while the Trump campaign was perfectly cooperative with the investigation and later the Trump administration, the obstruction of justice thing, I think, came out mostly from the content of his tweets. If you read the second, the volume two of the Mueller report, you'll see that almost all of the information he relies on is public. It was not information that they subpoenaed privately. There's almost no redaction in Volume 2 because all of the information is publicly available. A good bit of it were his tweets and his statements and, you know, press conference statements. But had he simply fired Comey and then made the standard announcement, Mr. Comey has determined that he wants to leave government service and we thank him for his service and wish him the best of luck, bye, then I don't think the obstruction issue would have gotten the wings that it got. But when the day after he makes the decision, he meets with Russian officials as part of his job as the president, and he says, according to the page 278 of the Mueller report, he's quoted, and this was in the press, telling the Russian foreign minister, Lavrov, "I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job. I faced great pressure because of Russia. That's taken off. I'm not under investigation." Well, you know, that's like throwing red meat at Mueller. I think the other thing he did that was ill-advised is criticize Mueller.
So here's the thing I wanted to ask you, that for a moment I had a brain burp there. That is, if we go a little deeper, and because I'm not an attorney, I like to focus on what certain motives could possibly be. So if you're willing to speculate with me a little about the obvious evil motives of a 2+ year investigation, $24 million, and an obvious desire to play offense so that they wouldn't have to play defense. And many of the people that are investigating are, in fact, people that deserve to be investigated. And we still hope that will happen. When you've got a deliberate motive that is quite possible in that, stay with me here. Then when you start saying that Trump brought on some of this himself, it doesn't ring true to me because you've got an evil intent that we've watched the media and everybody else parse his words of good morning. So Trump, in many respects, even if it was inelegant in the way that he may have defended himself, I think his inelegance has saved him immeasurably, because he is not only a fighter, but he appreciates and understands that you have people now in the government, unelected bureaucrats, willing to reverse an election by framing a duly elected president. So anything he would have said or not said, it was sensitive. It's sensitive. He's got to play it a certain way. I don't think anybody could have played it better than Trump in dealing with this many opponents that are out to destroy him. Those are my thoughts. What are yours?
Well, and let me deconstruct where I'm coming from on this, Karen, because I understand your viewpoint, and I do think there is evidence to believe that some of the people involved in the Mueller investigation on his team were probably ideologically, let's just say, not on the same page as Trump. And I do believe that
of modest explanation.
You value me for my circumspection. So let's just say that I see your point. And I do think there was an effort Again, you have to go back. Part of this is the defense lawyer in me. I've defended civil defense cases. I defend people that are sued when I was practicing as an attorney. Now that I'm a mediator, I'm trying to bring people together and get their disputes resolved without going to trial. But when I was a trial attorney, I defended people accused of civil wrongs and facing giant damages awards. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I always gave them is, the other side doesn't like you. The other side wants to take you down. The one thing you will do, you know, in the course of this lawsuit is be honest with me and be honest when you're under oath. But I always tell them, this is like volleyball. You can't score points until you have possession of the ball. And the other thing I tell them is, you can't win when you're talking. That you know, when you're being deposed, when you're being investigated, you know, you can't win the case by convincing the investigators you're right. But you can easily lose it when you try to tamper with the investigation like that. In other words, when you try to shape the investigators, you can lose the case. So,
but
what
Doug,
I always
let me, let me stop you. I'm sorry. I just want to throw something in here. Isn't that your trial lawyer point of view sort of getting in the way a tiny bit of the fact that in the case that we're talking about here, there is a whole nother jury, and that's the jury of public opinion. And in politics, it isn't just the jury of your so-called peers. It's that Trump is fighting a propaganda war that is beyond, above and beyond what allowing his lawyer to talk for him is. If we take your advice, George Bush wouldn't have, they wouldn't have laid a hand on George Bush because he never said a word, never defended himself at all.
No, it's not that. Let me see if I can go at it a different way, because I must not have made myself clear. What I'm saying is Trump had to have known that his victory was a complete shock to the Washington, D.C. system of the sort that they've never experienced before. I would be more than happy to say that his win was unprecedented in American politics. There really has
Absolutely.
Never been a situation like that where someone with zero political experience has gone from being a private citizen, entrepreneur, businessman, to being president of the United States, and a highly improbable president. This was the election, remember, Karen, that Hillary was automatically supposed to win. Even Bernie Sanders got out of the way eventually and got paid off to do it in order to pave her way. So everyone in that town was utterly convinced, and I think the Russians were convinced too, which is why they were really going after her. They assumed she would win, and they were trying to delegitimize her. It wasn't that they were really trying to help their pal Donald Trump. They didn't know him from Adam. Mm-hmm. But no one thought he would win. So when he did win, you're right, there were a number of people who did a number of things, you know, talking about the Hillary Clinton email investigation, you know, some of the other things they were doing, and some of the fairly active things they were doing to try to destabilize Trump's campaign, that when he won, these people all of a sudden had to face the prospect of, oops, all these things we did that we thought would be fine because Hillary, our girl, was going to win, and Comey thought, she'll name me FBI head, life will be wonderful. All of a sudden, the wrong guy won. So, yeah, I think there is something to that. But I think Trump had to have known that and should have paid more attention to the length to which they would go to do this. He seemed surprised that they kept it up for as long as they did. And I think either he's getting bad advice or something else is going on, because he shouldn't have been surprised at all. And so,
Doug,
make it easy on him?
Go ahead and make a final comment. We got to take a break and then we'll come right back with you.
Well, so why make it easy on him and talk to the FBI about firing the FBI head? Or talking to the Russians about firing the FBI head? That was really my only point about that. We can go back to the collusion thing, because I think you and I are in agreement on that.
Oh, yeah. And I just want to make a closing comment before our break. And that is that I tend to believe, and maybe we'll ask you this when we get back, that what they were trying to cover up, I'm talking about the FBI, the CIA, the Justice Department, all of these folks, I don't think it was just that they were shocked that Trump won and that Hillary didn't. I think that the prospect of a Donald Trump in the White House who couldn't be bought, who couldn't be owned, who made part of his campaign about cleaning up the swamp, and they are the swamp. So he stood in the way of them keeping secret stuff that I think what we're watching is merely the tip of the iceberg about the way they've been doing business in Washington since the previous administration began. I think it would curl our hair to know just how much felonious activity has been going on, and this is just endemic of we're beginning to see just how they operated. As a social worker, since I'm not an attorney, when you see behavior either maladaptive, psychotic, or criminal, you look for patterns. And man, oh man, if this isn't a pattern of behavior, I don't know what is. Think about that. And thank you so much for staying with us. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with our guest, Doug McQuiston, on Spouting Ops. Spouting Off. Stay with us.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. Thanks for staying with us. This is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio, Station 1. I am having such a good time talking to Doug McQuiston, a Colorado lawyer, mediator, and writer, and he has a very active Facebook page. Doug, why don't you tell people right now how they can connect with you on Facebook or take advantage of some of your legal knowledge professionally?
Well, they can reach me on Facebook by my name. It's right there, and I think it's fairly public. Feel free to pop on, take a look. I generally respond to friend requests and that sort of thing. I'm by no means a celebrity. It was just something that started out low key and has kind of taken on a life of its own over time. You can reach me on Twitter. The handle there is Piper McHugh, P-I-P-E-R-M-C-Q at twitter.com. And the mediation biz, the email handle is doug@mediatelaw.com. It's mediate, M-E-D-I-A-T-E, law, L-A-W, .com. I mediate with a company called Accord ADR Group out of Boulder, Colorado. Even though I'm a long-term Denver resident, I'm kind of the southern branch of that company. And we do mostly legal mediations, but, you know, lawsuits, personal injury, you name it, contract disputes, a little bit of domestic, that sort of thing. And like I said, the purpose is to try to see if we can get parties on the path towards seeing their way to an agreement. I've sometimes wondered whether D.C. could use a mediator from time to time and make it more done.
Well, perhaps so. But as a person who's very, very much a believer in limited government, I generally celebrate when they don't get enough done. It's
right.
Much better
if blessing, right?
If there's an arbitrary, adversarial relationship between people and government, because it usually means more freedom for us and less government for them. But that's, we're watching this terrible monopoly of power in Colorado right now, where there aren't enough votes to stop just an amazing amount of legislative excess. But going back to the Mueller report for a little bit, and then maybe we'll branch out, because we have we're blessed to have extra time with you, Doug McQuiston. We were, before the break, talking about the tip of the iceberg of corruption with unelected bureaucrats. Do you have a thought on that before we move on?
Yeah, and I do think there's something to that. And like I said, the report I'm looking forward to reading now that we've finished the Mueller report is the Inspector General report, who is investigating a good bit of this. We saw some of how it played out in the news with the Hillary Clinton email investigation and Comey's handling of that. There seemed to be a difference in how vigorously that was being investigated. No one seemed to care that the server was destroyed or that phones were destroyed and bleach bit was used to wipe a server, even after the subject of the investigation was known to Ms. Clinton and her team. No one seemed to care about that. So, yeah, I think there's a certain way things are supposed to go in D.C., and if nothing else, Trump upset that status quo, and I think he made some hard enemies in the process. You know, is it corruption? I generally don't have high expectations of Washington, D.C. to begin with, so I don't know how much of it is corruption versus how things have always been done there, and people get complacent and used to it. But yes, I do think there was a conscious effort to destabilize his campaign, to try to see to it that he couldn't win. That was the Peter Strzok insurance policy argument back when they were doing the investigation in the summer of 2016. And then when he did win, I think, at that point, so many people had their whole way of looking at things upset that I think the town went a little nuts. And the investigation probably was the result of that. But
this is another speculation. Go ahead.
I think a lot of what you're talking about isn't necessarily speculation as much as it's dot connecting, and not in a kind of a tinfoil hat way. I think there's ample evidence of in excess in terms of how these investigations were approached. There was evidence of mishandling as to how the FBI went about things. There's no way this should have taken 2 years, which is why I've said before, I think the appointment of special counsel was a mistake. I think this could have been handled by justice as it exists, with the personnel that it had on hand. Rosenstein could have done the investigation himself and probably gotten to the point a lot quicker. What were we trying to find out? We were trying to find out if the Russians messed with the election, if the Russians were trying to tamper with the two candidacies. That seems to me to be something that they could have done very quickly.
That's not what they were trying to find out, though.
No, I know.
I mean, if you look at this investigation, that's not what they were trying to find out at all.
Of course, but that was the publicized reason for it.
Yeah.
So, I do think you're right. There is evidence of that. It's not just, we're not just speculating about that. I think there's plenty of evidence, and I do hope that gets investigated too, because the FBI needs to clean its house if it's going to be what we all want it to be, the premier law enforcement agency in the world.
Right. you give me so many great nuggets, Doug. I want to slow down because you're going fast and there's a lot of great stuff and you give me a lot of great nuggets. So when you said something about this is the way business has been done in Washington, this might be speculation, what I'm about to say, but I really don't think it is. And do I have anything really to back it up? Probably not. It's just my view of things. Yeah, this is probably the way a lot of business was done in Washington, but the previous administration was a sea change in that sort of business. The previous administration, the Obama administration, employed and used power to go after its enemies in ways that I don't know, and I'm not a great, I'm not as good at history as I wish I were. I don't think America's ever seen that kind of Chicago thug politics that was brought to Washington as it was in the previous administration. I believe that is what they've been trying to cover up, because there is a treasure trove of dirty politics running through that administration, and it would have all been clamped down if, God forbid, Hillary had become president. They have enough on each other that would never have come out. It would just have been the third term of Obama. Trump represented an end to the gravy train and a potential felonious charges. And I also think, and then I'll shut up, it's you. I also think that there's so much. I mean, 2 years of this, actually three, this whole trumping up of hatred towards Trump was to try and cloud that issue. And that's why when people say it bugs the life out of me when they say they hate Donald Trump with such a passion. No, they trumped up hate of Donald Trump with such a passion simply because they knew this was a man who wasn't going to play ball with them. And it proves that the ugliness in Washington, they could have done a lot of things that Donald Trump has done to take care of and to represent the American people had they wanted to. They just didn't want to.
Right.
Your thoughts?
Well, we're seeing certain things pop up. I will tell you, I think the closest precedent you can come to how Obama used the levers of power, of executive power, to combat his political enemies and promote his political friends is probably the Nixon administration. Nixon didn't get away with it to the extent that Obama did, but Nixon used the IRS, or tried to use the IRS, to get at his political enemies. He wanted to see tax returns from the IRS of people that he disagreed with.
My understanding was he threatened it. My understanding is
Nixon, the IRS didn't cooperate.
And they went after him. Obama actually did it.
Right. In the Obama administration, because there was complete ideological alignment with his the people that ran the IRS, he had no trouble getting them to go after nonprofits who were politically active against Trump in not only the 2000, the initial election 2008, but also 2012, and shut them up. I mean, it was incredible the results they got from that by investigating some of these relatively small 501Cs that were actively campaigning against Trump and Obama's issues, and got them to remain quiet. So, yes, I think there was a lot of that.
At how he did it, Doug. Look at how they were able to corrupt and co-opt these large agencies. They could leave all the rank and file FBI, for example, in place. And all they had to do was make sure that they had cronies at the top who are willing to play ball with them. I interviewed an FBI agent who was floored at what he was watching, because he was like a 30-year FBI guy, and he was a pretty straight and honest guy. And then all of a sudden, when it came to investigating Hillary Clinton and others, they threw the rule book right out the window, because that was controlled by the upper echelon. That's how you do it.
Well, you're seeing some other things, too, that come out, that are starting to come out. Just percolating now in the news regarding Vice President Biden, of all people, going to China in 2010, I'm not quite sure the year, with his son Hunter, who happened to run, guess what, a New York private equity investment firm. And, of course, while there, Vice President Biden gains entree for his son Hunter to some Chinese investment circles and government circles. They fly back to the States, and a week later, what do you know, Hunter Biden's private equity firm picks up a $550 million investment from Chinese business interests.
What a coincidence.
I'm sure it was just a total coincidence. Similar issue in the Ukraine when Biden's dealings with the Ukraine, and what do you know, all of a sudden, his son's private equity firm that was having some problems with an investigation by the Ukrainian equivalent of our AG, the Ukrainians remove the AG and the investigation comes to a screeching halt. Wow, that's, you know, that's quite a coincidence. So you're starting to see some
that's
of that.
How business is done. And you know what? Some of the Democrats, some of the Democrats' op research is going to unveil some of that, don't you think?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I think Biden's hesitating to get in. I think it's starting to become clear to him that this isn't going to be the coronation that he was looking for. I think his launch window is closed. He may go in.
Do you think he'll get in?
I think
he will.
I'm not entirely convinced that he will. You know, the announcement was supposed to be today, then it was put off to tomorrow. Now I've heard it's going to come on Thursday. I think there's some hesitancy. And I hope for his family's sake that the hesitancy comes to pass, because this will not be pretty. But Sanders has already thrown some pretty sharp elbows, and I don't think he's going to be denied his nomination this time. So he's going to see to it that Biden is finished off one way or the other. So we'll see. It could be an interesting year.
In our, you know, 5-6 minutes left, can you make, you want to make some more predictions about 2020, about who you think will be the nominee? And what kind of predictions would you like to share with us if you have any?
Well, I'll start with
the circumspect lawyer.
The easiest one. I think Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee in 2020. I've had some friends pop on my Facebook page and try to convince me that he's going to be removed from office before then, but he won't be. No. I think he will, if the economy continues as well as it's doing, or even marginally as well as it's doing, he's going to be hard to beat. But on the Dem side, you know, I don't know. Sanders seems the early leader in the clubhouse. He's got several points over Biden. And there was an interesting comment made about Biden in his presidential run history. He's never more popular than when he's not running for anything. And his poll numbers will probably be never as high as they are now. When he gets in, he's just not that effective of a campaigner. So if he does get in, I think he'll make some noise, but Sanders will remain the front runner.
I still remember him as the old plagiarist. I mean, if you want, if you're dishonest and you want a running mate, as Obama did, you want to get someone who isn't very honest and can be bought, right? You don't. A dishonest man does not choose an honest man for a vice president. Doesn't happen.
And the precedent was Richard Nixon with Spiro Agnew. But yeah, right. On the Dem side, I think Sanders is the front runner.
They're more culpable than you are, right?
Right. I think, though, I don't know that Sanders is going to have the staying power. I think one you're going to want to watch is Pete Buttigieg. Another one you're going to want to watch is my kind of dark horse pick is Andrew Yang. But they're all going to be jockeying to see who can out free stuff the other. And, you know, we will see. I don't know how well Bernie will do on the campaign trail. I think he made people recoil in horror when he's saying, sure, let's let active felons vote. Sure, let's let them vote from prison. And, yes, I have no problem with the Boston bomber being allowed to vote. I think people are kind of a little bit unnerved by that. So we'll see how
well
he
does. If you're not recoiling in horror at an old communist running for president and getting the nomination, then you're not watching carefully enough. Don't you think?
Well, yeah, and that's the part that baffles me. You know, the Democratic Party prides itself and is constantly telling us about how they're the party of young people and people of color, and we're the new face and we're the fresh idea. And the guy they get looks like he just stepped out of the Russian Politburo. He's 78 years old. He'll be close to 80 when he wins. And he's got ideas that were from the 1930s.
When he gets the nomination.
When he gets the nomination.
And it's going to be hard. I read somewhere that Democrats are secretly plotting to try and get rid of Bernie Sanders one way or the other. Did you read that?
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. I think another one on the campaign that's capable of tossing elbows is Kamala Harris. I think she wants to be the anointed one. I think the Obamas want her to be the anointed one. She's currently in single digits and having trouble getting launched. But
George Soros wants her to be the anointed one too.
But you know, you got to look back at back in 2014 and 15, who was the front runner among the Republicans? Jeb Bush.
Yeah.
So, year and a half's a long time, Karen, and anybody that wants to predict who the nominee is going to be now is kind of off out on a limb. I think. Sanders,
and you know, I was unfair to you because when people ask me that when I guessed, I say much the same thing. I would never make a prediction at this point.
I think Sanders will not be the nominee of the party. One way or the other, I think you are right. Their efforts to unseat him are going to come to pass.
Yeah, but and I am fascinated by the open socialist/communist that we've got on the Democrat side. And I said this at the beginning of the program, how the Democrats have created this Jurassic Park monster in their base, and the base is pushing them further and further. Yep. I mean, they already are socialist. They're not the same party as my grandfather's Democrat Party. In fact, I don't think my grandfather was a Democrat. It's a totally different animal. And so to watch them fall all over each other to be socialists is an interesting thing to see. And we can't take it for granted, but it is an interesting thing to see. I'll tell you that.
It's a very interesting thing to see.
Yeah.
And we'll see. I mean, a lot of people counted Trump out a long time ago. I did.
That's true.
I never thought he had a chance. And I still ponder how he's managed to be so successful. But, you know, anybody that thinks he's going to be a pushover in 2020 is underestimating him.
Let's in our last few minutes, I was going to go somewhere else, but in our last few minutes, let's talk about that. You ponder how he's been able to be so successful. Do you still dislike Trump? Do you have respect for him? Do you think that he's bumbling his way to success, or do you think he's smarter than people gave him credit?
I'll start backwards and work my way up. I don't think he's bumbling his way to success. I think he has a conscious strategy. I think if you read his Twitter feed, people think he's unhinged, but he's not. I think a lot of this, if you want to understand what he's doing, you can understand by reading his book, The Art of the Deal. He misdirects better than just about anybody who's ever occupied that office. And he's mastered the ability to dominate news cycles and shape things the way he wants. It may not look like it at first, but he can tweet and have that be the only thing everybody talks to. All of the media is dancing on his string, and he does this very deliberately. I think he's had a number of missteps, though. His tax reform, while okay, could have been much stronger. His efforts to revamp and put in a decent health care plan in place of Obamacare was a complete cluster. It did not go well. I think working my way backwards, do I respect him? I know you'll be angry when I say this, but no. But I quit having respect for presidents when Ronald Reagan finished his term. I respect the office. I have grudging respect for what he's managed to do. When he won, I told everybody I would be happy if he picked conservative judges for the Supreme Court, and he's managed to do that far in excess of what I was expecting.
So he has
I'm very
done
pleased
that.
With what he did there.
Have one comment to throw in. I am glad that the Republican version of health care did not pass, not because of John McCain, but he was only running on repeal and replace because the establishment Republicans told him to. What we needed to do is repeal Obamacare, not replace Obamacare. That was one win that Obama made, is he made us all think we need the government to be involved in all our health care, and we do not.
Well, yeah, and I said at the time, once he got Obamacare passed, anytime the government expands a benefit, gives away something for nothing, That attaches itself to the system with tentacles so strong it's really hard to unattach. So I think the repeal and replace made for an effective message. But, yeah, you know, maybe it's a topic for you and I to talk about on another
day. I hated that message.
There's much we can do about health care reform that doesn't involve the federal government's money.
Oh, Doug, what a beautiful place to end a wonderful conversation. We're going to have to
thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Wrap it up. Tell people real quick how they can find you again on Facebook so they can connect with you.
Facebook, just look. I think you can find me by my name, Doug McQuiston, at Facebook. Twitter is Piper McHugh, PIPERMCQ, at twitter.com. That's kind of where I probably let my freak flag fly a little bit more than normal.
Okay.
Or at least on Facebook, I do have to try to make a living. And get in touch with me, email it if they have any mediation interests or desires. It's doug@mediatelaw.com, M-E-D-I-A-T-E, law.com.
And McQuiston, for those who are interested, is spelled M-C, capital Q-I, excuse me, capital Q-U-I-S-T-O-N. Thanks
right.
again.
And if they want to come watch our pipe band, it's the Mile Highlanders, and we'll be playing at the rugby gig this Friday night. So you can come down and watch the rugby game in Glendale and catch our band.
For those of us, for those people who are in the Denver metro area, you can do that. Thanks again for joining us. What wonderful insights, and a man who actually read the entire Mueller report. Thanks for joining us. Well, that's all the time that we have for this edition of Spouting Off. Just a program note for you. I'm going to be off for the month of May, but fear not. In the month of May, we're going to have four separate guest hosts for your listening pleasure, one right after the other every week in May. I'll be on a personal adventure that I may just tell you about when I come back. You can learn more at my website at www.karencataline.com. I will post there who our guest hosts are going to be for May. But in the meantime, thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio, and thank you to HW, the guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. Tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.